CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Friday, so a lot of people are in the mood for the weekend and not particularly perturbed about politics and such nonsense, but we have to pay attention to these things, and we try to dedicate ourselves to it once a week in the Burning Platform. Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. We get to explore all the stories in South Africa that are making the news, all the people who are causing trouble, and usually it involves us trying to find the corrupt politicians or discussing stupid decisions made in the ANC, DA, or EFF. And we always have an abundance of those to choose from. So today is hopefully going to be another exciting edition. And in order to help us navigate these treacherous waters, we have Michael Apple, who's from ENCA. He's on the line to talk to us this morning. Hey, Michael, nice to speak to you. It's always good to check in and see what you're up to. And thank you for making yourself available today for the Burning Platform.
Morning, Gareth.
Morning. First of all, are you in a serious mood today? Because it is Friday, we usually do the Burning Platform on a Thursday, but are you feeling serious? Should we go into some serious things, or do you want to start with stupid stuff? Hello? Michael?
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't hear.
You got me?
I didn't hear your answer. Stupid or serious?
Let's start with stupid.
Okay, can you sometimes... I struggle sometimes to tell the two apart. All right, let's look at Estina Dairy, shall we? Because this is still going on. You would think by now the milk had expired.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is actually quite serious. I suppose you're referring to the tweet I put out a few days ago. The intended beneficiaries, the guys that were supposed to have benefited from this but got screwed over in the most fundamental way.
By the Guptas?
By the Guptas, by the political office bearers. Let's just name them Mosa Benzizwane, Ace Magashule. They're being picked off, or at least it would appear so. There is one of the... intended beneficiaries was murdered last week, and there's an audio recording of seemingly hitmen planning to off another one. So that is a very nervous community at the moment. So those who were vocal critics of the failure of that project, they are incredibly nervous at the moment. And, of course, the public protector's report on this entire thing is in court being challenged by the DA at the moment. And CASAC saying that it looked at the bean counters and tried to wrap them over the knuckles without asking who was issuing the instructions, which, of course, points the fingers squarely at our favorite Mr. Zwane and Magashule.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, at the end, who's behind all of this stuff? But it seems fairly obvious, and you don't need to be... A trained CIA operative to join the dots on this one, right? Can they get away with this?
Stranger things have happened in South Africa, Gareth. I suspect this will come to a head at some stage, but these guys have become so good at creating plausible deniability between themselves and those carrying out the actual bad deeds, let's put it in inverted commas, that they will be able to, I didn't know, I wasn't sure, they never make the calls off their own cell phones for this sort of thing. I have that on good authority, so you're welcome to take their cell phone records. These guys are pretty expert at siphoning money out of the coffers and making sure it never traces back to them. So, sorry, that's not great news for a Friday.
All right, but let's just talk about this Philemon Ngwenya, right? He was the guy who was murdered last week, and you have gone to some trouble, and I'd urge people to follow you if they want to know more of the story at the Mike Apple, APPEL. You speak about the fact that he was murdered, and then friends and fellow intended beneficiaries were there to pay their respects to him. But to what purpose... If I were Ace Magashule or you know, any of these other guys who are implicated in this in a very direct sense, what benefit is there to me to take out these people? I mean, these are poor people. These are not wealthy people with influence. They're not people who are going to derail their political ambitions just by their existence, are they?
No, definitely not. That's what makes this just so damn terrible. Is the thing is, these guys are seen locally as by local politicians in the Free State as having big mouths. Every time a TV camera is there, they moan about the politicians, they moan about the corruption. And eventually, and I spoke to the public protector's office yesterday, they are coming to the town of Freda, and they are in November planning to meet with all of the intended beneficiaries to find out firsthand who made the promises to you, what were those promises, which local politicians were involved, which provincial people were involved. And to get the ball rolling here on perhaps getting to some sort of criminal prosecution stage, I know that the Hawks came and met with all of these intended beneficiaries. So it's not as if what these guys are saying doesn't matter. So, but I mean, the Hawks have been sitting on their damn hands for so long on about this case that you don't really have any confidence that that'll go anywhere. But hopefully, at some stage, what these people tell the authorities is going to matter. So this guy, this particular guy, Philemon Ngwenya, he was just incredibly outspoken. Every opportunity he got, he would moan and bemoan and speak out and name everybody he thought was responsible for the failed Stena Dairy project. And that was perhaps his undoing in the end.
I mean, I'm going to play a little clip that you have here, part of it, where you speak to a guy called Dr. Khadebe. Just give us the context of this.
So Dr. Khadebe was the original whistleblower. He was a DA councillor in the Pumalela municipality. Now, this is a tiny municipality. It's got less than 50,000 people, 47,000. Mm-hmm. And when there is corruption, I mean, people are going to notice because everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. And when he blew the whistle back in 2012 to say, hold on, guys, this doesn't make sense. Why are we giving projects away to a particular company that's run by a guy that manages, you know, PCs at Sahara Computers? This doesn't make sense. So he was ostracized. There's been attempts on his life in the past. So, I mean, this guy's got balls of steel, and I take my hat off to him that he, all throughout the year since 2012, has been willing to put his face to trying to stop this project and trying to right the wrongs.
From the South African Police Service as yet, Philemon Boyengwenya's murder investigation, the communications around it is being handled at a provincial level, so it's coming out of Bloemfontein.
You look very professional, Michael.
Thank you.
We did stop off in the town of Freda to come and meet with some of the intended beneficiaries of the Stena Dairy project that dates back several years now. The man who blew the whistle on this dubious project all the way back in 2012 is Dr. Khadebe. He was a councillor in the Pumalela municipality at the time, and he joins me now. Dr. Khadebe, thank you for your time. What's the reaction of the community been to the death of Philemon Ngwenya?
Well, people are very much devastated. We are saddened by the death of Philemon Ngwenya, one of the beneficiaries to that dairy. As that dairy has indeed come to a conclusion, it's still under investigation. So all in a sudden, we got this. He was brutally murdered.
You know, Michael, when I look at people like Dr. Khadebe and I see all these people who were meant to be the beneficiaries of this Stena Dairy Farm project, and I think of the context of small-town South Africa, makes it almost a sadder story than it already is. Small-town South Africa is going through the most difficult time probably since these towns were established, you know, a couple of hundred or less years ago in some places. Small-town South Africa has been denuded of any value. These municipalities are all rotten. We know that, 93% of them are insolvent in South Africa. It must be very difficult to live in a town like Freda. What is your overwhelming feeling when you drive to a place like this to report on a story like this? These are not places of prosperity.
No, they're not. It's literally like you're driving into a time warp and you're going back 30, 40 years. Freda especially, I mean, it's just, the roads are terrible. I mean, there's one hotel in this sleepy old town, and I have it on very good authority that Moshe Ben Zizwane is a shareholder of that. So I'm refusing to stay in that hotel anytime I visit there. These municipalities, they've literally, in 2018, 133 of these municipalities, these little towns, have passed unfunded budgets. That means that there's absolutely no money for the promises that they are making to their constituencies, their towns. So the houses, the clinics, the roads, everything they're saying they're going to build, there is no money for that. And they know that. But that's not what they're telling people, especially not with 2019 elections around the corner.
Well, while we're talking about no money, I mean, we had Tito Mboweni this week giving his medium-term budget speech, and he's pretty much said also that there isn't enough money coming in. We're going to have to borrow a whole lot more. But I noticed also in your timeline on Twitter that you heard a really horrible and unsustainable, terrifying figure. 70% almost of the money that is collected by SARS goes to servicing government debt and paying government salaries. 70%.
Yeah, so...
So it's no wonder that places like Frieda aren't ever going to see any money, because only the 30% that's left has to be used for everything else.
Yeah, so basically these municipalities or these local councils, they don't generate any money. They're supposed to, but they don't collect enough rates and taxes and services from the people that live there. So they're all reliant on national government handouts from COGTA. So, I mean, just an idea of our debt by 2021 is going to amount to 3.8 trillion rand, which is 58% of our GDP. So just to service that debt, in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, South Africa is going to have to pay about 250 billion rand a year to service that debt. That is a frightening figure. And the only thing that was encouraging to me was the fact that the finance minister said, listen, there's a 30 billion rand shortfall when it comes to the public sector wages that were negotiated. We are not going to make any money available as Treasury for that. The departments, you must find that money. If it means you have to get rid of a couple of advisors, stop buying expensive cars, stop renting expensive buildings, staying in five-star hotels, you need to make up that 30 billion to pay what you've promised in terms of this public sector wage agreement to the public servants, because we're not going to pay it. But the fact that 30-35% of government revenue goes directly into the hands of public servants, into the pockets of public servants, should I say.
Yeah, and we know that they're paid grossly exaggerated salaries for the kind of work and productivity that they manage to deliver. So
yeah,
they're a bloated, parasitic service, if nothing else. I do see some people are very excited about a few things. Some people are excited about the fact that we're slowly getting rid of some of the rotten people, and maybe this is worth stopping and taking a breather to celebrate. I mean, Tom Moyane is now out of the picture. Zuma's out of the picture. Jiba's out of the picture. There are a couple of people who are starting to fall from the rotten system now, and we're collecting the bodies at the bottom, right?
Yes. Tom Moyane has until the end of today.
Are you sure?
Look, I'm just inherently cynical about this whole process. And if I have to hear that another commission of inquiry is being established to look into something that is so obviously criminal, I'm just going to completely lose my mind. All these people you speak about. So Jiba yesterday was suspended, and there's, surprise, surprise, going to be an investigation, another inquiry into her fitness, her and Hwebe's fitness to hold office. Tom Moyane has got until the end of today. I like it when there is action that's announced, and you can see, well, we've got 24, 48 hours, 2 weeks, and then something happens. Because South Africa We love these long-winded processes where everybody forgets about what the end goal was before it even gets there. So Tomoyano, by the end of today, will either have been fired or the president will be given reasons that he's by him why he should not be fired. But he's in the Constitutional Court. Everybody's fighting, using every legal avenue available to stop this process. But yes, Gareth, okay, I'll admit the pile of bodies is slowly piling up. And the implicated parties, but the damage done under our former president is so bad
and wide ranging. And I see, talking about the damage done, that Tomoyane, because of his horrible management at SARS, the 20 billion VAT refund backlog that they've got there has pretty much wiped out the revenue expected from the VAT hike. So. You cannot help stupid. Stupid just ends up being its own worst enemy.
Yeah, SARS, and I think, and I don't mean to make her the poster child for the state of SARS, but I think that interview that SABC did with the head of IT, I think it's an illustration of the depths to which of ineptitude and just downright
incompetency
and trouble that we are in. If somebody like that is running such an important part of SARS, it's bad news.
All right. Can we talk quickly about some of the other things in Tito's speech yesterday? He did say that he wants to cut down the number of government ministers and the size of the executive. And we actually played a little game here in the studio where we tried to figure out how many we could get rid of. We managed to whittle it down. Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, we got it down to about 15.
Yeah.
Oh. You, what do you think of that, Michael? Any comments have you picked up in your travels around places like Frieda and Johannesburg and everywhere else? What do people think of this?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I see 0 point in having deputy ministers. Do you know that a deputy minister, when a minister leaves the country for some other reason, a deputy minister doesn't take over that portfolio? Another minister is appointed to stand in as acting minister while a minister is out of the country.
So what do deputy ministers do?
Gareth, very good question. They hang out at Cubana, and as you know, the rest is history. It's a very good question. What on earth do deputy ministers do? And it just became another way to ride the gravy train and just hand out positions, create positions for people when the CEO or the boss leaves the office, they can't do the job in any case. Somebody else is put in their place. So as a colleague of mine said yesterday, they are there and they have the ability to cut ribbons, and that's about it. So if you had to whittle it down, Tito says down to 20, max 25. I love that. I think it's a great idea.
All right. If we turn our attention further afield, there's a lot going on in America. I don't know whether you've been paying attention to these bombs that have been sent to various Democratic leaders and even people like Robert De Niro and George Soros. The Americans are dealing with a serious problem here when it comes to the distance between Republicans and Democrats. That chasm between the two is growing. In ordinary families, we see it becoming a reason for them to fight at dinner tables. They say that parents are less likely to accept a boyfriend or girlfriend brought home by their children who is a member of another political party than if they were another race, another ethnicity, another religious grouping, or even same sex.
Jeez. Well, I think it's a clear reflection of just how divided the U.S. is at the moment. I was sitting in Frieda at the time that the news broke that bombs had these effective explosive devices, as the FBI describes them, yes, that they'd been sent around to everybody. But the thing is, if you start, as Donald Trump, if you start painting absolutely everybody as the enemy, it's going to have a consequence. Of all those people sitting there that are watching this every day, some of them won't see it as just political filibustering or any of that. They will see this as, we need to go out there and take action against these people. that are spreading fake news, i.e. the media, or as the EFF would call the media, the cabal, the enemy is coming. Eventually, something's going to happen. Somebody's going to take it literally and take it upon themselves to act. What we see, and I mean, let's not forget, CNN is painted every single day by Trump as this fake news organization. So I don't think there is any coincidence in where these bombs were sent. And I think it's politicians, and I think this is South Africa's included, they need to take responsibility for what they say. When they open their mouths and they make stupid comments that can be interpreted very literally by people, I think this sort of thing will happen.
Well, absolutely. And I think that, that Trump is a very divisive figure. I don't think there has been a president more divisive in living memory. And we'll have to see where this thing goes. Can we come back to South Africa for a second? Because it seems that Brian Shivambu won't go away.
So I was at that press conference. Now, and I had a little look into Brian Shivambu. So his brother says that he was managing, he was doing what's called transactional service consultancy work, transactional service advisory work.
Is that what he does? Is that what he's qualified to do?
No, he graduated from TUT last year with like a governance diploma.
Sure.
But you know, let's not shortchange the fellow. Let's say that he is an amazing transactional service advisor.
Sure.
And he was at pains to say, this is Floyd, that it was on the non-banking assets of Vele Investments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, stay away from VBS as much as possible, but that's fine. So he got 16 million rand in a year. It works out to about 1.3 million rand a month that he's making from his advisory services. I said to a lot of people that attacked me when I said, well, I'd like to know, firstly, what skills does this guy have to be able to render such incredible services?
Yeah.
Secondly, has he been able to show SARS billable hours? Has he declared the 16 million rand as income to the tax man? And thirdly, how the hell did he do it? I would love to. I mean, I would get out of the media in an instant if I was able to earn 16 million rand in a year.
Those are quite reasonable questions. Were they answered?
Of course not, no.
Okay. Well, let's leave that where it is. I see Ethiopia elected their first female president this week. Her name is Saleh Work Zewde. She takes the largely ceremonial post on. Many celebrated Africa's only current female head of state, Africa's first female president, of course, Liberia's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She left office this year. And people are very excited in Ethiopia because they unanimously elected the country's first female president days after approving one of the world's few gender-balanced cabinets.
Hmm.
Any comments on that, Leanne?
I wouldn't have expected that from Ethiopia, but
yeah, there we are. Uh-huh. Very forward-thinking. Ethiopia, one of the only countries in Africa that's never been colonized. There was a brief period where they were under Italian law, under Italian rule during Mussolini's time as the fascist dictator, but otherwise a very very much an outlier on the African scene. So there we go. All right, anything else you want to throw in, Michael? What are you worried about at the moment?
What am I worried about? I just can't get over the fact that we are still bailing out like the three delinquent teenagers of South Africa's state-owned entities. SAA Express, and the South African Post Office.
Oh, right.
Can these three just go away? Like, seriously, the fact that we're giving $5 billion to SAA again, SAA Express has got 1.2 billion rand debt, and the South African Post Office is getting 2.9 billion. Can we not just spend this money better or differently? And I really think he didn't rule it out. Tito Mboweni hinted at a reconfiguration, but can we just say what we mean, please? And can we get rid of these like serious delinquent teenagers of the SOEs? They need to just go away.
But get rid of them would imply that someone would want to buy them.
Have to buy them.
No one would want to. No one wants to buy them.
I heard an important statement the other day where would, in terms of the public-private partnership of, let's say, SAA, would the South African government rather want to own 10 or 20 or 30% of something of value or 100% of nothing of value? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way they have to start thinking about this. Get rid of what doesn't work. Like, seriously, put your pride aside. A national carrier, I really don't think it's such a massive deal anymore. And I do have some trust in the Gov, as he likes to be called, that that maybe we can start seeing some public-private partnerships to get rid of some of this stuff. Maybe fix it up and then sell it off. Because as you said, nobody wants to buy what's broken.
Sure. Well, Michael, thank you very much. Any words of advice? I'm sure you, during your travels as a journalist, have gone to a place like Secunda before. Any words of advice to Ben? He's got to be there this weekend.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's what we said.
Yeah, take a cooler box. That's all I can say.
Gareth, I'm going to Graceland. It's like the fancy part. I keep telling you.
All right. I'll take your word for it. Thanks, Michael. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks, Gareth. Cheers.
There we go. Michael Apple from ENCA. You can follow him at the Michael Apple, APPEL, on Twitter. And you can follow all of those stories. He's been very much involved in the Estina Dairy Farm story, which we started talking about at the beginning of today's Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. Every week you get a little update on all the important stories in the news. CliffCentral.com.